And welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we have somebody on here who's just a, I guess the best way to describe her is genius, comedic genius and everything else. But you don't go by genius? No, you don't want to?
Here's the fun thing about the term genius. It just means that you're proficient at what you do. Because I've had various conversations with people about various celebrities. And they're like, this person's a genius. And I was like, it has nothing to do with your intellectual capacity. It just means that you're good at what you do. So you can put windshields in Buicks and be a genius if you're good at it.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's what King said. If you're going to be a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper possible. But we have none other than Dulce Sloan joining us on the show today. How you doing today? Is everything good in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, my mama just took her dog to get a bath, which is amazing. And then so I had to talk to a lady about a dog. And then I'm just catching up with one of my homegirls, as the kids like to say, because I'm 40. So yeah, today is pretty good. This is it's gonna be a good day because I say so.
No, that's all you can do. That's all we can control. My show is kind of unique because we start off our show by having our guests walk us through the arc of their careers. And you've had a storied career as a comic, but also an actress, and now as an author. Talk through each one of those stops since finishing school, and when did you know that comedy would be your calling?
I found out comedy was my calling when a comedian by the name of Big Kenny Johnson made me take his stand-up class because he told me that I was a comedian. And then he didn't charge me for it because I didn't have the money because I was on unemployment. So the cost of the class is basically my whole unemployment check. And I was like, "Unk, I ain't got it." And he's like, "You're supposed to be a comic. I'm not going to charge you." And then my mother had a dream that the whole world was laughing at me. So I got into comedy because God said so. It's other people, you know, sometimes people can see a skill in you that you don't see in yourself. Mm. People can see things in you that you don't see in you. And so I had time because I was not working. And so I could take stand-up class and I could, you know, Big Kenny would take me to different shows. He invited me to stuff. And so, because when I got out of school, I graduated from college in 2005 because I'm an old lady. And I started doing stand-up in 2009. And I met Big Kenny in 2007. And so I was in an improv troupe. I was in a murder mystery play. I was in To Kill a Mockingbird. I did A Raisin in the Sun. I played Benita. And so I was an extra on a Tyler Perry show because Who in Atlanta wasn't. Literally the whole, he's given the entire state of Atlanta $35. And then I started doing stand-up in 2009. And then in 2015, I got my manager. In 2016, I moved to LA. In 2017, I booked Daily Show and moved to New York. So I hope that people realize that the term overnight success is truly a lie. truly a lie. It is a lie from the devil. Because I've been acting since I was a kid. So I performed, I did shows in elementary school, in middle school, high school, college, and I have a theater degree in an incomplete Spanish minor. And so the thing that I think helped me the most is that my mother was always supportive. Because I didn't realize that like not everybody's parents are supportive of them being in the arts. I'm friends with my manager, and I did not know that everyone wasn't friends with their manager. So I've had a lot of people around me and gotten opportunities because people pushed me and people cared about me.
Before we talk about your book and your work, I always like to ask comedians that come on the show, who were their comedic influences and who's on your comedic Mount Rushmore?
The first comedian I ever saw in my life was Margaret Cho. Mm. So the first comedian I ever saw was a queer woman of color. And so, and she was like, I remember it special. I think I had to be like 9 or something. And She was in San Francisco and she's on this huge stage. And I was just like, what is this? But I met Big Kenny in 2007 and he said I should be a comic. And stand up scared me because I'd never been on stage and not been performing. As in, I wasn't a character and it was my own words. And so that's why stand up scared me. And so I didn't take in a lot of stand up until I started doing stand up. So I think the next comedian I remember seeing on TV was Greer Barnes, and I was like in high school. And he's an amazing performer. But when it comes to like comedic Mount Rushmore, I would say Roy Wood Jr., Roy Wood Jr., Roy Wood Jr. No, I'm kidding. It would be Roy Wood Jr., Baron Vaughn, Maria Bamford, and Shalewa Sharp.
Okay, I dig those.
Those are the comics who, because I came up with Shalewa, we started the same year, and she has a show called a one-woman show called Don't Reach in the Bag, about the 6 years she worked in an adult video store that I'm producing. But she's on my comedic Mount Rushmore because to this day, every time I see her do stand up, it always makes me question what I'm doing. What am I writing down? I remember watching her one time going, did I write jokes? Do I write jokes? What am I doing? And I appreciate her so much as a performer and as a friend, but just to watch her style of stand up because it's so different from mine, the same way Maria Bamford's is so different from mine. But you have to see those people who make you go, what the hell am I doing? Like truly, what am I doing? But yeah. And then Roy just saved my life at Daily Show, truly.
Shout out to Roy Wood. He's a friend of the show, friend of mine. A great, great person, great comedian, but a better person. And that says a lot because he's a hell of a comedian.
He's an amazing person. I sometimes tell him, Roy, you're too nice.
Yeah, that's true.
You're giving people too much of your time. I need
Yeah.
you to be a little, just let me do it. You know, let me just come up and go, hey, open mic, or you know, you can't have his number. No, he can't help you. This man has a child to raise and things to do today. You're not going to be doing stand up in 3 months. Go away. Stop wasting this man's time. Also, Roy Wood Jr., stop being so nice. Do not give this open mic your number. He's not going to be doing stand-up in 3 months' time. You have a child to raise and things to do. Back up.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Fair enough. Let's talk about Hello Friends, stories of dating, destiny, and day jobs. Hello Friends. It's a memoir, and you cover a lot in the book that folks may not know about you. First, why a memoir at this point in your life and your career, and what do you want readers to take from it? When I interviewed Cicely Tyson, I asked her that question. I said, why now? And in true Cicely Tyson form, she said, because I finally have something to say.
Also, wasn't she 90 when you interviewed her?
Yeah,
Like,
and it was the first, I mean, that was a the first book she wrote. I was like, do you have story? I mean, the book, by the way, is fascinating, but I digress.
I wanted to call it, don't call it a memoir. I'm only 39. And they were like, well, we can't tell people what not to call it. And I was like, oh, y'all don't understand comedy. But they understand selling books, so I had to listen. I don't think it's a memoir. It's a book of stories.
Okay.
It's, so my manager tricked me is what happened. My manager tricked me. I was bamboozled. I was hoodwinked. I was just really just taken on a magical journey. We were approached about me writing a book, and I was like, I don't know. And then my manager said, let's just take a meeting. And then we took four meetings, and then now I have a, and then I had to write a book. So when I say he tricked me, the man truly tricked me. But he was trying to bless me in the process. So once I found out I had to write a book, I called Michelle Buteau, and I was like, how the hell do I do this? Because she wrote her book, Survival of the Thickest. And she said, start with stories that are too long for you to tell on stage. And that's where I was like, okay, well, what have I always, what's something I wanted to say on stage? So when I talk about, like, you know, the ex making me breakfast, or my first job out of college where my boss was like, I had to sleep with him to make more money. I started with those things. And then it's like, well, this is how I grew up, and these are day jobs that I had, and this is what it was like being at the Daily Show. And so I put in all of these other things, but I started with stories that I could, that were too long for me to tell in my stand-up.
So, good question. Who's the audience for the book?
Everybody? I don't understand. I think the audience is...
Like when I wrote my book, I was like, oh, this is geared towards Black women, or this is geared to young people who want to be in the business. This book, your book is just written for the masses.
Well, that's, it's, when you look at who comes to see me when I do stand up, it's all kinds of people. So for me, it just was like, because people are like, well, you know, you have to target your audience. But I'm like, but when I look at my audience, it's not a room full of Black women. It's not a room full of gay men. It's not a room full of college students. It's not a room full of, it's like, it's all races, it's all orientations, it's a hodgepodge of people. So I wrote this book for people who, one, wanted to know more about me, and two, people who just wanted to, just like, I'm a very Southern person, I'm a very Black person, I'm a very Southern person, and anything a Southern person loves to do, they like to tell a tale, they like to spin a yarn. We love to spill tea, we brew tea, we spill tea. And so what I wanted my audience to be is a person who's like, okay, girl, let me tell you something. And they're the person who's either telling that story or the person who's sitting there going, go on. I wrote the book for the people who love to hear a story told. Like, just want to sit down and go, oh, okay. People enjoy tea being spilled, people who enjoy some chisme. That's who I wrote the book for.
You know, when you write stories or books like this that are, you know, your truth, and you're kind of giving yourself to the world, I guess my question is, how did this writing this book change you at all?
It made me very sad in certain parts. It made me very happy. It made me feel very blessed to have my mom. But it also, like in the dating part, it made me look back at myself like, literally 20 years ago and go, am I in the place that I am in now because of the decisions that I made when I was in my 20s? But then I was like, I made the best decisions that I could based on the information that I had. And if I had married the man I was engaged to when I was 22, I would be divorced. Truly, I would be divorced. I'd have children. Like, I want children. I want to be married, but I wouldn't have been in a happy marriage. I wouldn't have been happy. I wouldn't have the career that I wanted. I wouldn't have the life that I wanted. And so I had to go, okay, I can't be mad at 25-year-old me. I can't be mad at 30-year-old me. I can't be mad at 35-year-old me. Because she made the best decisions that she could based on the information that she had. And so I had to give myself grace. I'm also in the process of still learning to be nice. I'm very hard on myself. I don't know where it came from. society, probably. I don't know. So it's me, you know, going to therapy, which was very difficult to do because, you know, we're raised to not have nobody know our business. And getting a therapist is literally paying somebody to know your business. So learning to do that, I think, is what I've had to learn. But the process is hard. It's very hard. Like, this one, like, this is a whole book. This is a whole book. I didn't write no pamphlet. This is not a children's, even a children's book is hard. So this isn't a couple, this ain't 25 pages slapped together at your local Kinko's. This is a whole book that somebody done paid for, bound together. And so I'm still in that process. I'm still in the process of going, like, I can't be mad at myself for things that I, for decisions I made 10 years ago, because it's not fair to me now.
What can we learn from your memoir about dating and destiny?
You can't learn anything from me about that. Like, dating? Let me tell you something. If the blind is leading the blind, somebody has to be the dog. And there is, like, my homegirl asked me for some dating advice the other day, and I was like, ma'am, what in the history of you knowing me makes you think that I can offer you any assistance? Now, I cannot spot a good man, but an ain't shit dude, I can spot from 50 paces. Know that about me. A man who will mess your life up, clear vision. Anything beyond that, I don't know what to tell you, sis. So, I think what you can learn from me from dating is that I can tell a story, and I can't teach anything about dating because I'm still in the process of figuring it out. So all you can see is my process, and you can see somebody who is trying to learn from their mistakes and somebody who just went through some nonsense. Also, it's like, come on, girl, all of this? Yes, all of this. And I'm also annoyed by it, but it's to let you know that those times where you're like, am I the only one going through this nonsense? No, sis, pick up my book. No, friend, pick up the book. You'll see that I was going through some dumb shit in the Obama administration. Please know that. The first one and the second one. And Bush and all the, listen, if there was a president, I wasn't doing well. There's been nice boys, but I still ain't got no ring. So apparently we're not done. When it comes to destiny, I never had any intention of being a stand-up comic. And for me to be as successful as I am in stand-up comedy and not to have any intention of being a stand-up comic, that pisses comics off. And I'm not trying to piss anybody off, because that's their feelings about it, not mine. But if you are meant to do something, it will come to you, and you have to decide whether or not you're going to do it. I had to decide whether or not I was going to be a stand-up comic. And Big Kenny came after 2 years hitting me up, take my stand-up class from 2007 to 2009. Kenneth Johnson was making sure that I was in his stand-up class. It took me 2 years. And so there was something in him that saw something in me that made him continue to go, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Even when I couldn't see it and it scared me, he's like, I understand. I will teach you how to do this. Because it's interesting. I was sitting at a table with comics. And they were going on and on and on about how stupid stand-up classes are. And nobody should take a stand-up class. And then they whipped over and went, isn't that right, Dulce? I said, I took a stand-up class. You probably should have had more information before you asked me that question. Because all I did was prove your point wrong. Because the comic who was making all of this noise, I was more successful than him.
Yeah.
Way more successful than him. So, sir, you might just want to ask one question before I prove your point wrong. So you have to decide sometimes if someone's telling you that you should be doing a different career or pursuing another path based on the talents that you have. Because he told me that I should be a comic because I know how to tell a story. I know where a punchline is in a story. I already have stage presence. He gave me all of these reasons why I should do this. And all I did was find reasons that I shouldn't. And so when I finally took the class, because I had a professor in college who was like, you should do stand-up. And I was like, you sound crazy. And I finally, and that was 2003, he told me that. And by 2009, I was doing stand-up. In 2015, I started doing it full-time. So it took a while to get to it. But once I got there, it was, listen, my mother doesn't work. So.
Well, you done something right. That's where you want to be.
I mean, listen, her day today consists of taking a dog to get a bath as opposed to
working,
working yep. a 9 to 5. So she's in a new car with a silly dog going somewhere.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Look, let me ask you this question. Where can people buy the book? When is it out? All those good things.
The book comes out on February the 6th. And it is available at books.disney.com. It's on Amazon. It'll be available at all of the major booksellers. And if you go to premiercollectibles.com, you can get a signed copy of the book.
Perfect. Oh, I did that too. And I signed all those books. Look, congratulations on your GLAAD nomination for Outstanding Variety, a talk show episode with your interview with Sasha Colby. First, I really enjoyed that interview. It was phenomenal work. What does it mean for you to be acknowledged for that interview by GLAAD?
It means a lot to me because, one, that was the first and only night of my hosting week. Because the show aired and then 30 minutes later the strike started. Two, Sasha Colby made me her daughter, so I'm now a member of the House of Colby. I'm a daughter of the House of Colby. And I wanted to bring her on because, you know, I've been watching RuPaul's Drag Race since it started. But it's good to be not it's to be recognized for it by GLAAD means that I was able to, in the interview, let her tell her story, let her be seen. But also, it's important to me because it's like, that's a community that is in constant danger, especially trans women of color. Mm-hmm. And so, as a woman of color, because trans women are also women, but as a cis woman of color, my life is also in danger. As a Black person in America, my life is also in danger. As someone who lives in a body that people have to have an opinion about and feel like they should be afraid of or in fear of, I understand that. So I don't know what it's like to be a trans woman in America, but I do know what it's like to have people make opinions about me because of the body that I'm in. That I understand.
Said that's powerful.
Thank you. So for GLAAD to recognize that interview means that I did my job. And that I was able to show Sasha Colby and other, and be able to tell her, because she was talking about being a happy trans person. That was the interview was about. Because there's so many times they want to show, you know, trans women in these tragic stories. And I was like, oh, they do the same thing to Black women. we're a sidekick or we're tragic or we're always this other thing. And just to be able to show someone who was a trans woman who's living her life, that's why it was important, because she was talking about being a happy trans person. And so I feel like I did my job. Not only that, it's like it's showing a part of a community that people don't want to acknowledge, in the same way that, like, people always call Black women angry, but no one asks why we're mad. No one's concerned about that. They're just angry. For what? Why do you think we're upset? No one asks us ever. It's just assumed. No one knows. So it's like I wanted to be able to just showcase her and let her tell, you know, her truth, I guess. But also for people to see the life in her and the humanity in her, because that's what any movement is about. That's what any civil rights movement is about, is you just standing there marching with signs going, I'm a fucking person too. Just because I don't look like you or talk like you doesn't mean that my existence as a human being is any different or lacks any value. All civil rights movement is just you asking people who are in charge and just going, can you please stop killing me and acknowledge me as a human being? And that's it.
Last question for you. What other projects do you have on the horizon that you can talk about, and how can people follow you on social media?
Well, The Great North on Fox, I do the voice of Honeybee, is out now. It airs on Sundays on Fox and the next day on the Hulu's. And then The Daily Show comes back on February the 12th. And maybe that's the main thing. This book, baby, listen, let me tell you something. We're trying to get this on the bestseller list, okay? I need y'all to show up and show out, because listen, it takes a year to write a book, and this was, you know, time away from work, time away from family, but also it's if they can see that one of us is getting a book deal and one of us is doing well, then someone else can get a book deal. And it sucks that one of us has to do good so somebody else can get an opportunity. But it is what it is. So the book is available in all those places. It's also like, there's a link on my link tree. And because I think I know how that works. But my social medias, it's DulceSloan.com, DulceSloan on all of the socials. And I also started a lip gloss business with Lace Larrabee. So, Eagle Gloss. As a way to sell merch on the road. So I started a lip gloss company. So I'm just over here doing stuff until my husband shows up.
Doing it all. Congratulations on your success. Dope book, dope project.
Thank you.
Dulce Sloan, thank you for joining the Bukkake Sellers podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.